So we have two papers to hand out here, so two people can pass these out. The title of the seminar is Lord Brahma's Prayers for Mercy, and the topic is mercy mostly. We all need mercy, and we all want mercy. We don't want justice, we want mercy. Maybe for others, justice is okay. We want justice for others, but for ourselves, we want mercy. And we need mercy in order to progress the spiritual life. It's very important to have mercy. So somebody can, they can keep them by the door, and those people who come in late, they can have the papers. To King Yudhisthira, inquired from Lord Krishna, how is it devotees of Lord Shiva get so much opulence, and devotees of Lord Vishnu or Krishna, they don't get so much? Sometimes they don't have their properties to even. So Lord Krishna answered, if I especially favor a devotee and want to care for him, the first thing I do is to take away his riches. But don't worry, that's only for a very special devotee, not for the ordinary person. Yeah, keep them by the door, and then people can take them as they come in. Yeah, two different piles you can keep. And so then they can get the papers as they come in. So when a devotee becomes penniless, and his family members don't care for him anymore, and they may even give up their connection. So then the devotee becomes doubly unhappy. First, no money, now my family also doesn't like me. But however, when a devotee, when this happens to a devotee, then it's not due to past karma. It's not the karma, but it's special mercy of Krishna. And when the devotee has money, it's also the special mercy of Krishna. He has special mercy. When the devotee becomes rich, it's not due to his karma. It's Krishna's special mercy. Srila Prabhupada himself is the example. According to his chart, he should have been as rich as Birla, who is one of the richest people in India. I heard that he has caves of jewels, many, many jewels. So anyway, he's a very rich man. And the Prabhupada should have become richer than the richest man in India. Now maybe somebody else is richer, I don't know. But it used to be, in those days, it was Burma. And but instead of becoming rich, Krishna took everything away from Prabhupada. But then he gave everything to Prabhupada. First he took it away, Prabhupada became penniless and he depended on Krishna. And then after that, Krishna gave him everything. He said, often he said, I went with 40 rupees to the west, and I came back with 40 crores. Now I have 40 crores of rupees. So which businessman can do that? It's not under the laws of karma. That's Krishna's special mercy. So Prabhupada is an example of the mercy of Krishna, that he was supposed to be the richest. There are some papers there you can take. He actually became the richest. His chart is correct. Even my chart says I should have so much money, but when I was doing book distribution, then I had so much money, but it wasn't my money. You know, I was collecting for belonged to Krishna. I would collect lots of money, and all of it we would give to Krishna, and nothing belonged to me. So it's very funny how the charts of the devotees work, and they say you have so much money, but yeah, it was true. I did, but none of it was mine, not even one rupee, so I had to give it all to Krishna. There's two papers. Yeah. In either case, when either a devotee becomes richer or poor, it is arrangement is made by Krishna to make him dependent on him and to free him from all material obligations, and he can concentrate everything on service to Krishna. So what is mercy? If you think of mercy in one word, what word can you use to describe mercy? Just think for 1 minute, and you can think what would be mercy?
Compassion.
Compassion, good. That's a good word for mercy. Anything else?
But here the mercy is, it's like blessings.
Okay, blessings, very good. Compassion, blessings. Yeah, both are correct. These are many different words for mercy. Another word is Krishna. Krishna's mercy, we say often. It's not really the word for mercy, but Krishna is mercy. Krishna is our mercy also. Oh, but in Sanskrit, what is the word for mercy?
Kripa.
Huh? Kripa? Good. Kripa. Kripa?
What is it? Daya.
Daya? Kripa? Daya?
Kripa
Drishti.
Kripa?
Drishti. I can't hear.
Kripa Drishti.
Drishti, okay. Kripa Drishti.
Kripa Drishti.
Another word for sadhana is supposed to be mercy, yes?
Krishna
prasadam. Krishna prasadam, yes. Everything is prasadam, actually. You see how everything is the mercy of Krishna, then you can be very happy. You'll be very happy in this world. So now I gave you a chart, and on your chart it says what is actually mercy. There's a definition. In Sanskrit, it is actually a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, which I didn't write, it's Canto 10, chapter 88, verse 10. Actually, 10.88.8 is the verse where Krishna says, I take away everything, and I take everything away, that is my special mercy. But if you go two verses later, then there is an analysis of mercy by Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book. If you look at the translation in our book, it's not there. But it's in Krishna book. Prabhupada somehow he translated it differently from our version that we have now. And so in your chart I have given you the words which Srila Prabhupada has explained what is mercy. The first word is Brahma. Brahma means great. This greatness can only be compared to Brahma. Unlimitedly great and unlimitedly expanding. So it's not a static thing. Mercy is so great and it's so much expanding also. Mercy is expanding. So that because Krishna is expanding, and if you go to the spiritual world, everything is expanding. Love is expanding. And the things you do is a different thing every day. A different type of food every day. Radharani never cooks the same thing for eternity. Can you imagine? There's an eternity of things to be cooked for Krishna. Cowboys never play the same game. That will always be a little different. Something will be a little not the same. Otherwise, it'll get boring. Here we have a problem with boredom, but there you will not have any more boredom in the spiritual world. So the first word, Brahma, Paramam. Paramam means there's no comparison in this material world. Why is there no comparison? Because if Krishna takes away things from you, then what does he give you in return? He gives you something in return. He's not just going to take away. He gives you himself. Krishna gives you himself in return. Shukshman, very fine. Finest quality of love between the devotee and Krishna. So when the devotee has a test and he passes the test, then he feels this love of Krishna so much. Oh, this was actually the best thing that happened to me. If you look back, sometimes we don't appreciate it when it happens to us, that if it's a difficult type of mercy, the thunderbolt mercy. We have the rose and the thunderbolt. Sometimes we get the mercy of the rose, and sometimes we get the mercy of the thunderbolt. And so, if it is a test, It's like a thunderbolt, and it may be like a thunderbolt. But then the devotee, his love for Krishna expands. Chinmatram, it is completely spiritual. Sat, eternal. Mercy is eternal. We want eternal mercy. Anantakam, unlimited, and is causeless. We do not deserve it. Causeless means there's no reason for the mercy. Just Krishna loves us, and so he gives us mercy. So now I will start with the verses of this seminar is based on prayers of Lord Brahma, Canto 3, Chapter 9, verses 1 to 25. And some of those verses you have in your verse sheet, and some you don't. So the first four I will just read because you do not have them. And when we get to five, we can all join in together. So verse 1, Krishna, Lord Brahma says, "Oh my Lord, today after many, many years of penance, I've come to know about you. How unfortunate the embodied living entities are. They cannot know your personality. You are the only knowable object, as there is nothing beyond you. If there is anything superior to you, it's not the absolute. You exist as the supreme by showing the creative energy of matter." So I'd like to share with you something from Niranjan Swami's Vyas Puja. He says, Srila Prabhupada knows, "I'm so much in need of your mercy, but what have I done to qualify myself for your mercy? Whatever I've done, there's one thing I'm sure of, it's not enough." Not enough. We have to always keep trying to get the mercy. So the simple truth is to be considered, those who are worthy to be considered devotees, devotee is always dependent on the mercy of the Lord and his devotees. So he says, you know, who am I? I have no right to ask for his mercy. So the worst of all, I don't love him, so why should he give me his mercy? So this is our condition, our position. Prahlad Maharaj says the same thing. I'm born in a family that's in the qualities of passion and ignorance. So who am I? And you didn't even give your mercy to Lord Shiva and Lakshmi. You didn't even put your hand on their heads. For Prahlad, Lord Yashinade put his hand on Prahlad's head. So that was very special mercy. But Krishna, he considers the service that we do, even though we are born in his blessed families. Of course, not all of us, some of us are, especially if you're born in the West. But most of you are born in India, that's Punya Bhumi, and that's a good place to be born, and that's why even though you're here in the West, you're still interested in hearing about Krishna. So, this is, despite all our qualifications, we are given the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Gaudiya, and Srila Prabhupada. So, and he sees, when I travel, I see people, they become very alert and they start hearing about Prabhupada. And they start telling Prabhupada stories. And devotees want to glorify you and give their lives to you. And the people who get the books, they beg to read the books, more and more books. They want to read what Prabhupada has written. So this is very wonderful. So Brahma, he's grateful for the mercy, for his good fortune, but at the same time, he's thinking about us. He's saying, oh, what about these poor conditioned souls who are suffering here? So causeless mercy means to know Krishna, to know something about Krishna. And in the purport, it explains that one can know Krishna by his mercy, which is given to those in disciplic succession. So I think some of you may be going to the Guru Disciple Course, which is, I don't know if it's today. It's today, what time today?
At 10.
Oh, it's happening. That's why I guess you're not going. Those who are going are not here. They're in the Guru Disciple. Oh, it's at the same time. Okay, so we have a conflict here. That's okay. So that's also mercy. You have to learn what is to be expected of you. So we need to know, what is our qualification? Our qualification for mercy is to follow the Guru in the succession. Because Krishna's special mercy, he is a mercy incarnation of Krishna. Guru is mercy incarnation. Just like Lord Chaitanya Nityananda, they are also mercy incarnations, but even more merciful than Krishna, than Lord Chaitanya and Goni and Nitai is the spiritual master, the pure devotee. The mercy is really coming through him very, very quickly. So in the second verse, oh, I would like to just tell you one story before I go on. How Prabhupada's mercy, it came in his books, and sometimes just in his glance. There are many devotees who got the glance of Prabhupada and they felt like he was seeing them for many births and seeing their soul. So in Europe, in one temple, there was this person, he was a boxer, you know, a fighter. And there's a sport called boxing. And he was a boxer. He was coming to the temple and he was having prasadam. And he was very interested. So they said to him, well, why don't you stay here? He said, no, I have my boxing. I'm very attached to my boxing. I cannot stay with you and join. So, but then Prabhupada came to the temple, and after Prabhupada gave his lecture, then he was leaving his car. Somehow, the devotees, many devotees came to say goodbye to Prabhupada, and the boxer was there, and he was pushed. To his face was plastered on the window of the car where Prabhupada was sitting. And Prabhupada looked at him very intensely. And that was it. He came back, he said, okay, I'm joining. The glance of the pure devotee. And so the devotee said, well, what about your boxing? He said, after a glance like that from Prabhupada, how can I go back to my boxing? So that was it. He just got the glance of Srila Prabhupada. And his life was changed. So mercy is coming. It may come in a glance or it may take longer. We can read the books of Srila Prabhupada, follow his instructions, and be a part of this movement. So now I'll tell you verse 2. You don't have it yet. And you're shot. The form which I see is eternally free from material contamination, and his advent to show mercy to the devotees is a manifestation of internal potency. This incarnation is the origin of many other incarnations, and I am born from the lotus flower growing from your navel home. So who knows which form of the Lord he's describing here? He's got it's Brahma's growing from the lotus, from his navel. Very good. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the form of Vishnu that Brahma is seeing. No, in his meditation, by the mercy of the Lord. And from this incarnation, all the other forms come. And all the Buddha avatars, Lord Brahma, Vishnu, Kshirakshaya Vishnu expands. And so it comes. Now next, verse 3, Brahma describes the qualities of the Lord that attract him. I don't see a form superior to your present form of eternal bliss and knowledge. In your personal Brahman effulgence, there is no change and no deterioration. I surrender to you because I am proud of my material body and senses. But you are the cause of everything, but you are untouched by matter. Untouched means he's not proud. We know the story, perhaps you don't know, of Bhrigu Muni going to visit Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. Because they weren't sure who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so they were giving a test to Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So first they went to Brahma, Bhrigu. He was the son of Brahma. He should have offered respectful obeisances to Brahma as his father, and he didn't. And Brahma got angry, but then he controlled his anger. So he said, okay, he's not the Supreme, he got angry. Then he went to his brother, Lord Shiva. He's also born from Brahma, this Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva came to embrace him. My dear brother, he said, don't touch me. You're untouchable. You're living in the crematorium. You're associating with ghosts. Lord Shiva got so angry, he took his trident, he was ready to kill Gregory. No, okay, he's not supreme. But and Parvati saved him. And she said, no, he's your brother, don't kill him. He got so angry. But then he went to Vishnu, and Vishnu was laying on his bed, and Lakshmi was massaging his feet. And Rigo went there, and he put his foot on the chest of Vishnu. He kicked him. And the Lord got up and he said, oh, I'm so sorry I did not receive you nicely. Please forgive me. And I hope your foot didn't feel any pain from my hard chest. So then he said, okay, he's the God, but he's so humble. He's the controller. He's the Purusha. If you, in this world, people think if you're the controller and you're the Purusha, that means you're everything. And they become proud. But actually, humility is spiritual. It's a quality of the Lord. And he was showing it in this, even as Vishnu. Of course, Lakshmi didn't appreciate it. That's why sometimes the Brahmanas are poor now, because Lakshmi was not happy with that gesture of Bhrigu Muni. So anyway, now Brahma, he goes on. Oh, I would just like to describe another thing about the qualities of the Lord. Because here on your chart, you have some qualities. Nothing is beyond him. He's a reservoir of pleasure. He's a creator. He's a soul. And so, I surrender to you. There is a verse in the 10th canto, 14th chapter, that in time, the scientists or philosophers may be able to count all the atoms of the earth. Does anybody a scientist here? Nobody can tell me how many atoms in the earth, or how many molecules are coming from the sunshine. Maybe one day they can count. Or how many particles of snow, I don't know if you get snow here, particles of snow there are coming down. But they'll never be able to count the qualities of the Lord. And according to Sanatana Goswami, there is a specific quality for each and every one of the living entities that the Lord has manifested to attract us to him. There is something in the Lord that will attract us to him, only us, very special, just for each. Each and every, that means how many qualities? More than billions, trillions, quadrillions, because how many living entities are there in the universe, and even in all the universes, we can't count. Our brain smoke will start coming in and it will explode if we try to count how many living entities are there. And there's quality for each and every one. So I'm going to ask you a question now, that you have all come here to the temple. Something must have attracted you, or something attracts you to be in the temple of Krishna. Some quality of Krishna, or quality of Gaurinitai Jagannath. Now we can't see him, Radha Krishna. So just think, what quality attracts you to be a devotee, to surrender, to chant, to be here? Think for a minute, and after you think, now you can share with us, if anybody would like to share, what quality attracts you to him? Any qualities? Yes?
His beauty.
His beauty, that's just what I was thinking. Yeah, he's so beautiful. Nothing like him in this world, Radha Krishna. His beauty is unearthly. It's in a different dimension. The beauty, any other quality, attracts you. Yeah.
Goodness.
What?
His goodness.
His goodness. Yes, he wants the best for us. Who wants the best for us? Of course, our mother. Our mother does, always. The mother is eternally wanting the best. But Krishna, she gets it from Krishna. Yes?
His lotus feet.
His lotus feet. Yeah, they're very special. They're very special. Lotus feet of Krishna. I have so many marks on the bottom. And do you know the marks? And you said, no, okay, well, that's something for you to research. If you're attracted to the lotus feet, find out what's on them. Yes, you have, yes.
His devotees.
His devotees. Yes, his devotees. That's a quality of Krishna, actually. It's an amazing quality of Krishna. Anything else? Any other quality?
Krishna loves his devotees.
Krishna
loves
his love. Yes, everyone's looking for love, and real love, true love in this world. So Krishna has it. That's where it's coming from. Where all our feelings are coming from, they're coming from Krishna.
Krishna.
Yes?
Krishna's kirtan is very nice.
Kirtan. Okay, the kirtan of his names is very sweet. His name is sweet. He is because he is sweet. And that's why the kirtan is sweet. Good. Any other qualities that attract you? Okay, so we'll go on. Verse 5, you do have in your paper. We will sing it together. This is a very special verse for all of us. And we will read this verse. Ye tu tadiya charanam ujako shagantham. Chant.
Ye tu tadiya charanam ujako shagantham.
Chikram ikarna vikalai shukti bhaktanitam.
Chikram ikarna vikalai shukti bhaktanitam.
Pakya vihita charanam. Paraya chitisham.
Pratya vinita charana paraya chitisham.
La pai china tahideyam puruha sapumsam.
La pai china tahideyam puruha sapumsam.
Oh my lord, persons who smell the aroma of your lotus feet carried by the air of Vedic sound through the holes of the ears, accept your devotional service for them who are never separated from the lotus of their hearts. Now, one thing I forgot to do is read verse 4. So I'll read that right now, and we'll talk a little bit, and then we'll come back to this verse. So he says in verse 4, this present form, or any form expanded by Krishna, is equally auspicious for all the universes. Since you've manifested this eternal personal form upon whom your devotees meditate, I offer my respectful obeisances to you. Those who are destined to be sent to hell neglect your personal form because of speculating on material topics. So don't get entangled in material topics, false arguments. Now, Prabhupada in the purport explains who are these people who are ready to be sent to hell. That is the impersonalists. We have heard about them before. The impersonalists, they want to meditate on the light, the impersonal feature of the Lord. Prabhupada calls them pilgrims to hell. I mean, we've heard about pilgrims. Mostly pilgrims are to the temple, to the holy places. But there are also pilgrims to hell, and they're happy about going there too. They think this is great. You know, why, you know, there's a party down there, people are drinking, and we're a woman. And all the things we're not supposed to do, people are doing. But in the spiritual world, people are also drinking spiritual, and they're also intoxicated with spiritual beverage, with prasadam. They're also dancing and singing and having a really good time for eternity. So we should not get entangled in false arguments. So now this verse is about drinking the Lord, is it? No, through the holes of the ear, smelling the aroma. So somebody here was saying the quality of Krishna's lotus feet. Here it says, persons who smell the aroma of his feet through the ears, accept your devotional service. And he comes into the ears and goes to the heart. That is the process. That is our process. In the ears and to the heart. So this is Prabhupada's words. He has anyone had the experience of smelling through the ears? No. But in your spiritual ears, you can do that. You can smell through the ears. Then that's Prabhupada's mercy, that we can smell Krishna's lotus feet through our ears. Through our ears. Sometimes we hear about seeing the Lord through the ears. That you can actually, that you can understand. Suppose somebody's, your best friend or your lover is talking, your wife is talking to you on the phone. You can see them through your ears. You know, you're hearing their voice, and the picture comes in your mind. So the same thing when we chant, we hear Krishna, and the picture can come into our mind if we're really chanting nicely Krishna's name. So now, not only can we see through the ears, we can smell through the ears. The aroma. What do Krishna's feet smell like? Lotus? Oh, very good. Yeah, because they're lotus feet. Good argument there. Why? What do they smell? They must smell like, if they're lotus feet, must smell like lotus. Yes, never thought about that. Lotus feet. What else do they smell like? Tulsi, very good. We always have tulsi in Krishna's lotus feet. They smell like tulsi, they smell like lotus.
Smells of honey.
Honey, oh yes, yes, we have heard there is honey there. And they're sweet, it must smell sweet, yeah. It must smell like honey. And all of this we can experience when we hear about Krishna. We can smell the honey or taste the honey, and that way only smell. We should taste it and smell the tulsi, and we can see the feet, we can see the tulsi. And the lotus, very good. Now next time someone asks me why we say lotus feet, I'll say because they smell like lotus flowers. And also there's honey there. And the devotees' minds are like bees, and they go for the honey of the lotus feet of Krishna. So, this is Prabhupada's mercy. In the spiritual world, we will get spiritual senses where we can see through our ears, smell through our ears, and taste through our eyes. Krishna tastes through his eyes when we offer our prayers, or through his ears when we offer the food to him. And becomes prasad. He tastes through his ears. So this is also what we can look forward to. So Srila Prabhupada, the purport says, for the devotee, there is nothing beyond the lotus feet of the Lord. And the Lord knows such devotees don't want anything more than that. So the Lord doesn't want to be separated from the heart of the pure devotees. It's a lotus heart, you know, we have a lotus in our heart. And the lotus is meant for Krishna to sit there on that lotus. And that's what this verse is about. Prabhupada had Krishna's lotus feet in his heart, and so he could give Krishna to us. And Prabhupada was so attractive to everyone because he did have Krishna's lotus feet in his heart. So I think maybe none of you have met Srila Prabhupada in person. I have. But I would like to ask you that what qualities of Prabhupada, you have heard about him, you have read his books perhaps, what qualities of Prabhupada attract you to surrender and become a devotee? What qualities that Prabhupada has? Thank you. Yes.
Compassion.
Compassion, yes. He has amazing compassion. He did not know us, but he went to the West and he risked his life. He had two heart attacks. Now, who's going to start his mission with two heart attacks and do anything after two heart attacks? Of course, I know one devotee in Vrindavan, he's had about seven or eight, and he's still going. But Prabhupada had two. And yes, that's quite amazing. Usually, with three, you're finished. So he just kept going. Compassion, what other quality? Yes.
The amount of struggle he had.
Struggle, yeah. How much struggle he had. He didn't give up. Means determination positively. He had so much determination. Yes?
Loyal to Guru's order.
Loyal to Guru's order. And that's basically all he had when he went to America, was the order and a few books. And if you saw the original books, they were not for the very difficult to read because so many mistakes. But Prabhupada said, when the house is on fire, then it doesn't matter if you don't speak the language properly. Because he said the house, this world's house is on fire. So we have to give this knowledge to the people. Oh, any other qualities?
Completely devoted to Krishna.
Completely devoted to Krishna. Yes.
But faith on Krishna and his enthusiasm of giving Krishna to others.
Faith in Krishna, enthusiasm of giving Krishna to others. Good. Yes.
Prabhupada's leadership skill.
Prabhupada's leadership skill, yes. So we all appreciate a leader. How did he lead? By example. We could not compete with, we could not compare with him. He would walk faster than us. I was on a morning walk and I was trying to figure it out. How is he walking so fast? And he is over 70, we are in our 20s, and we are tired, and we cannot keep up with him. How is it possible? Just couldn't figure out. It was beyond your mind and intelligence. Yes?
Free from the three modes of nature.
Free from the three modes of nature. Yes. He didn't get jet lag. It was very funny. He would go on the plane and he would arrive somewhere. Okay, time for massage. And the devotees didn't want to go to sleep, you know. Because they didn't sleep that night, Prabhupada. It didn't matter. Whatever time he would say, okay, now it's time for lunch. Okay, now it's time for class. He would just get off the plane and then he would follow his schedule. The poor devotees, they were not used to it. They would fall asleep on the plane or whatever. Actually, whenever Prabhupada would come, the devotees would usually stay up for one night or two nights or three nights without sleeping. So as soon as Prabhupada would give a class, they would sit down and the whole class would be asleep. And Prabhupada would look at them and say, it is simply the mercy of Krishna that you are here. Because they were not on the level of Prabhupada. So we need this mercy and we need to beg for it. So I would like to ask you one more question is, how is Krishna's mercy coming to us? How is it coming?
Devotees,
okay. Any other ways? Or what is the, you can know, another question would be, what kind of mercy is coming to us? What is mercy if you go through your day?
Mm-hmm. Holy name.
Holy name, okay.
Krishna prasadam.
Krishna prasadam. Mm-hmm. Yes, very good. Yes, you can go back to Godhead by having prasadam. It's a fact. Any other ways, any types of mercy that we get? Yeah. He gives us the guru's instruction, is it? By being here, yes. Yes?
Association of the devotees.
Association of the devotees, good. Yes?
Opportunity to serve.
Opportunity to serve, yes?
Service.
Yes.
Even just through Prabhupada's books.
Prabhupada's books, they're definitely mercy. And so today I give you a little homework before tomorrow, and nothing you have to write. But I just want you to look for mercy today. Look for the mercy. How is the mercy coming to you? And tomorrow you can report back what mercy you got today. Tomorrow we will meet again at 10:30 in the morning. And you can report what mercy you got today. So now we've got some ideas what to look for. You can look for service, you can look for association. But sometimes, even if you're not looking for it, the mercy comes. So that type of mercy also you can look for, you can just see. And another way to look for mercy is anything that's coming to you is mercy. Whatever comes, this is Krishna's mercy. So Rama is praying for mercy. We also can pray for mercy. You can make a prayer today for mercy. Begging for mercy. Niranjan Swami, he has made a nice prayer. He says that when I travel, I see devotees' lives. People are changing. They transform into bright-faced, enthusiastic beggars for your mercy. by just associating with those who love you. I see children who have grown up in your movement are making plans to spend the rest of their lives serving you. I see devotees crying unlimited tears in gratitude for all you've done for them. All this and so much more is all due to your mercy. There's no limit, but somehow this unfortunate beggar has not progressed enough in his desire to get this mercy. I can only maintain hope against hope. One day you may consider me a fit candidate for your mercy. So I beg you, please know I have nothing left to do before you today than to beg, plead, and if at all possible, cry out for your mercy. I have no other hope, and I remain confident there is every good reason to hope. So you can also make a little prayer today for mercy, and the mercy of the Lord will come to you. And do remember to look out for some mercy today. See, whatever is coming to you, it can also be said that it is mercy. So now I will read from verse 6 to 10, and you can join me again when we come to verse 11. 11 is a special verse. So verse 6, O my Lord, the people of this world are embarrassed by all material anxieties. They are always afraid. They always try to protect wealth, body, and friends. They are filled with lamentation and unlawful desires and paraphernalia. And they greedily base their undertakings in the perishable conceptions of my and mine. As long as they do not take shelter of your safe lotus feet, they are full of such anxieties. So, anxiety is one of the causes of illness. And for mental illness, it's one of the main causes. Actually, 40% of the college students in America have to take drugs for their mind, to make their mind peaceful. They have some kind of mental stress, disease, something. Very, very difficult time that they're living in. It's Kali Yuga. But Prabhupada explains the positive side, although the verse is very negative, that people are trying to protect their wealth, their body, their friends, but everything is slipping away in this Kali Yuga. So one main question, how can you think of the Lord if you're embarrassed by thoughts of family affairs and so many things? So this verse is very appropriate. How can you do it? Again, as long as they don't take shelter of your safe lotus feet, they are full of anxieties. So taking shelter of the Lord's feet is the solution here. Why a devotee has no anxiety? How to be free from anxiety? Prabhupada explains in the purport. A pure devotee never thinks himself the proprietor of his home. Now, why doesn't the devotee think, this is my house? Because he has Krishna in his house. So this is Krishna's house. Imagine the difference in mentality. If you're living in Krishna's house, it means you're living in Vaikuntha, you're living in Goloka, you're living in the spiritual world. Because everything in your house is related to Krishna. Everything becomes spiritual. Even your family becomes spiritual. He surrenders everything to the control of the Lord, so he has no fear for maintaining his family or protecting his family. So this is a big anxiety, the family, how to take care, you have to go to school, so many expenses. He's not worried. Krishna is the Lord of luxury. He has all the wealth, so it's his house I'm living in, then my family will also be happy. They will also have enough. He will take care. Krishna says in Gita, one verse, that if my devotee worships me with surrender, then I will protect what he has. And if he lacks something, I will give it. So this is true. Srivas Thakur, an associate of Lord Chaitanya, had a very big family. But he was not doing anything to maintain. He did not have a job. He didn't have any job. I don't know if they had jobs in those days. I guess they did have jobs, some people. But he didn't have, he wasn't doing anything. And Lord Chaitanya was worried because she wasn't worried. So he said, you know, I see you have a huge family. You're not doing anything to maintain your family. How is this? How are you going to survive? Srivastava Thakur said, his answer was, well, what do you mean? He says, if I will clap my hands 3 times after 3 days. If I get nothing to eat for 3 days, I will clap my hands 3 times. Then I'll put a stone on myself and draw myself in the Ganga. Lord Chaitanya said, he said, Lakshmi may go hungry one day, but you will never starve. He said, Lakshmi may be without money, but you will always have enough money. I will see. Your family will have enough money for your whole life. So if we depend on Krishna, then Krishna provides. I mean, it's not that we don't work. We should also work. You know, don't say, okay, Krishna, you provide. And you know, I'll just sit here and be happy. No. Just like Arjuna. Arjuna had to fight. He had to fight. It was his duty. We have to do your service. So Krishna, he didn't say, okay, I'm taking care of it. And everybody already, he said, I've already killed all these people. They've already died. And then what did he say next? He said, but you have to be my instrument. He didn't say, I already killed the people, they died, just sit on the chariot and meditate, no worries. No, you have to do your service, and Krishna will provide. But in spite of doing everything, doing your service, thank you, Mantri Chan, in spite of all of that, you cannot maintain yourself, Krishna won't maintain you if you dedicate yourself to him. And so, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had this mentality that I am these, all my family members, my sons, and he had a huge family. How many? 10, 12 children, Bhaktivinoda Thakur? 10 children. And he said, these are all your servants, Lord Krishna. These are all your servants, so I must maintain your servants. That's how he thought. These are the servants of Krishna, my wife also, my family also, they are all servants of Krishna. So it is my duty to maintain them. So it's not like you leave your job and just stay at home, Krishna will maintain us. No, you work, but with a different mentality. Make Krishna the controller, the owner of your house. Make your family members his servants, and you also the servant of Krishna. And that will be the nice mentality of, and then you will have no anxiety. And you have no anxiety. So verse 7, my Lord, persons who do not chant and hear about your activities are certainly unfortunate. They engage in inauspicious activities, enjoying sense gratification for very little while. So those who don't, now he's talking these verses from 6 to 9 to 10 actually, about those who do not surrender to Krishna. And so they suffer. Inauspicious activities. So why do people work so hard? Because here it says they get sense gratification for a very little while. How long do they enjoy? The verse says, Lisha Lavaya. You know how much lava? It's a lava. Lava means about 8/45 of a second. If you look in Canto 3, you will find out the exact measurement of a lava. It's not even a second of enjoyment. That's how much enjoyment people get. But for that little flickering not even half a second of enjoyment, they work so hard the whole week, and sometimes even more than the whole week. And you have to work hard. Even the president, I was staying in somebody's house in Delhi recently, on the way here. And the man is the president of a company, and he has to work 12 hours every day. And I was so surprised. I mean, is that the standard here? I don't know. In America, it's 9 to 5. Here, it's 12. And use them out in my time, it was $8. And then you have to get overtime. Wow, that's amazing. I hadn't realized how Kali Yuga has progressed. 12 hours is the standard, even for the president of a company. Wow. Okay. Yeah, it used to be 9 to 5. Wow, I didn't know. Okay, 12 hours. So for the 12 hours, then we work for about one sixth of a second of happiness. If you take your body and you see how much happiness, imagine if you have a very severe pain in your little finger, where does your attention go? I mean, your whole body is 99% is okay, but you've got a very severe pain, or in your eye, a very severe pain in your eye. Where does your attention go? And suppose, so you've got 99% happiness in your body, it's, you know, doing well, but then you've got pain in one small part, so. Or else, imagine you have pain in 99%, and then 1% is okay. Where's your attention going to go? It's going to go. So this is the news of this material world and the news of this material body. So Lord Brahma Prabhupada in his purport is talking about the people that the Lord's pure devotees take compassion upon such unfortunate persons and try to persuade them to devotional service. Only by the grace of pure devotees can such unfortunate men be elevated to the position of transcendental service. So one of my god sisters, Jamuna, now she's become famous because there's a book written about her, a biography, and her father was a butcher, and he was working in the slaughterhouse. But she didn't even know her father. He left, or they were separated at a very early age. And she's one of the nicest devotees who was in our movement. Okay, now verse 8, we're going to get a list of the problems in this world. Oh my Lord, these poor creatures are constantly perplexed by hunger, thirst, severe cold, secretion and bile, attacked by coughing in winter, blasting in summer, rains, and many other disturbing elements, and overwhelmed by strong sex urges and indefatigable anger. I take pity on them and I'm very much aggrieved for them. So has everyone experienced something on this list here? If not all of the above? That we cannot escape. I heard it was 39 degrees the day before I came, the day before yesterday, but that would be blasting summer. And coughing winter. Now if you go to Vrindavan, you can experience coughing winter, where I came from. And so many bodily things. So Lord Brahma is very much lamenting for those who are suffering. So Prabhupada said in his purport, unless the devotees take pity and teach them the right path, then their lives are hopeless failures. The devotees who voluntarily take the responsibility to raise the foolish materialistic sense enjoyers are as confidential to the Lord as Lord Brahma. So if you want to be a friend of Krishna, just give somebody a book, tell them about chanting. Try to take pity on the poor suffering people. Verse 9, as long as the material miseries are without factual assistance for the soul, yet as long as the conditioned soul sees the body for sense enjoyment, he cannot get out of the entanglement of material desires. They engage their senses in very troublesome and extensive work, and they suffer insomnia at night because their intelligence constantly breaks their sleep with various mental speculations. Anybody ever have a sleepless night here where you're worried about something? Oh, what if that happens? Oh, that happened. Oh, what am I going to do? That's the story here. I heard everybody has to take sleeping pills in America. Like one devotee went to a hotel and they give you a sleeping pill, you know, as part of your, before you go to sleep at night. In New York, you cannot sleep without a pill because there's so much stress. So they are frustrated in all their various plans by supernatural power. Even great sages, if they're against your transcendental topics, must rotate in this material world. So different classes of men are in this world. Some work hard in hellish factories. Anybody here ever work in a factory? Prabhupada said factory is another name for hell. I haven't done that. And they cannot sleep at night. Others discover how to quickly destroy the world. And I don't know if you have here in Australia and America, we have these chemtrails that are very destructive to health on purpose so that people will support the cancer industry, which is billions of dollars in America, the cancer industry. Others try to invent their own systems of religion without devotional service. And this you'll also find. So, yeah, my son Govinda, he used to work in a factory for 2 weeks only, thank God. And he was pushing 5 tons of paper from one place to another. Mostly he had the machine, but the last 5 feet, he had to push it himself. 5 tons, I think it was, or 2 tons, I don't know. Anyway, it was a huge amount. And he had these shoes on, factory shoes, and his feet were bleeding because, you know, they're not hiking shoes. And they had, you know, to protect his feet, he had to wear these kind of shoes. They didn't fit him properly somehow. So anyway, yeah, then they fired him because, well, first of all, they wanted him to work 12 hours. Then, well, that wasn't enough. They wanted him to do 2 shifts. I think it was an 8-hour shift. They wanted him to work 16 hours, and he refused. He was already working midnight to 8 in the morning. Then they wanted him to work 7 days a week without any vacation. And then his wife got the baby, and he said, I need 3 days off. And so they said, no, we fire you. It's like slave labor. I mean, it's really something in a warehouse. So one devotee, Bajahari, he was working in a steel factory before he met Srila Prabhupada. So when Prabhupada came, he was in a darshan. He was sitting in a room with Srila Prabhupada with some people. And he told Prabhupada, you know, after working in this factory, I almost had a nervous breakdown from the stress. And Prabhupada said, that is because in your last life, you were all brahmanas. He pointed to everyone in the room. You were all brahmanas. Otherwise, how could you come to Krishna consciousness so quickly? It's the fact that we, you know, some of us just left, like Ayanya Prabhu, he left everything. He just heard the Harinam one fine day, and he started following the Harinam party. You know Ayanya Prabhu, he was the kirtan king in Vrindavan, or the world. And so on the way he was running to catch up with the devotee, he lost one shoe. And the devotee said, you can go get your shoe. He says, I'm not going back. And that was it. He never went back. He just followed the kirtan the rest of his life. He just joined the temple. So obviously, he was a Brahmin. And many of us, we just dropped everything. As soon as Prabhupada called, wherever we were, we just dropped everything, just like the gopis, they dropped in November, serving their family somewhere, running milk on the stove. They just left it when Krishna blew his flute. So when Prabhupada called us, I remember one devotee, he said he was living in a flat, and he heard the call, and he left the tap on in his flat, and he just went. And upstairs there was a post office, you know, full of papers, and it started to flood them. Anyway, yeah, some devotees, they weren't like that. It took me 5 months, but then it happened like that, too. That I went for Harinam for the weekend with Vishnu Chand Maharaj. That was it. And so then I couldn't go back home. I went back home to say goodbye to my husband and joined. But my husband joined 2 months later. So, yes, we both joined basically together. And so then Prabhupada said, my Guru Maharaj has ordered all of you to take birth to help me spread this mission. And now we are all together again. So we can say the same thing, that Prabhupada has ordered all of you to take birth to spread this mission. And now we are together again. Because it's not easy to serve Krishna, to leave your material things, your material. Someone was telling me, you know, joining Krishna consciousness, one Indian, because in India, the relatives are very important. There's a very close family. So she was saying, you know, that her husband was telling her, you know, you are, you know, we have to spend more time with the family. And she was saying, this is difficult now because, you know, they eat meat, we don't. And so we may lose some relatives there when you become a devotee. She said, becoming a devotee means you lose many relatives. I said, no, you have to make them all devotees too. That's what one Nepali young girl, she got married, went into her relative's house, and gradually, they all became devotees. Now she has like 15, 20 family members and her in-laws, they all became chanting Hare Krishna and became devotees. Very powerful. If the devotee lives in the house, it's very powerful. So here, we will read the next verse, a very wonderful verse, verse 11. You do have this with you. And so we will say it together. It's again about the Lord coming into the heart. Tvam pahiyoga paribhavitari sarocha. Ase shite shita pato dharma tapunsan.
Ase shite shita pato dharma tapunsan.
Yadiyatiyata purukaya vibhavayanti.
Yadiyatiyata purukaya vibhavayanti.
Tata vapu pranayase saranugrahaya.
Tata vapu pranayase saranugrahaya.
O my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears, one process of bona fide hearing. Thus, their hearts become cleansed, and you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. So now we're hearing, seeing through the ears. And what are we seeing through the ears? Krishna. And when we see through the ears, our heart becomes clean. Krishna sits there in our heart. He's already there, but we just can't see him. And because when we chant, then he cleans our heart. And he says in Bhagavatam, Punya Shavana Shinvatam Sokatam Krishna, Punya Shavana Girtanam. And it's very pious activity hearing and chanting about Krishna. Hiranta Stokim Dhani, Vitunodi, Sunit Satam. He cleans our heart because he's Sunit, he's our well wisher. So what does it mean? Okay, he's there. What does it mean to take his seat there? Prabhupada says that actually the Lord comes in our heart in a form that we like to see him. We like to worship him. So what this means is that the Lord becomes a servant of the devotee's desires. We have a desire, oh, I want to see Radha Krishna. Then he comes, Radha Krishna. Or who? Hanuman. He wants to see Sitaram. Sitaram come. It's the same Lord, but he shows different forms according to different desires of the devotees. So why? Why does he do that? And here it says, he manifests his particular form as a devotee demands. Devotee demands. I want to see this. Devotee doesn't demand. But the Lord takes it that this is the devotee demanding. I must show this form. So the demand of the devotee is satisfied because the Lord is flexible in terms of service of the Lord. There is a verse in Bhagavad Gita, Yeyatamalukabhadyamtekamsatayopajamyamam, that as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So according to who we worship, who we're attached to, some are attached to Lord Jagannath, and so now they're suffering in separation. But some of them, they're still serving Lord Jagannath up in his room. So, but at the same time, Prabhupada said, although he does follow the devotee's desires, he's not the order supplier. We can't just say, okay, here's my list. Go shopping for me today, my dear Lord. I do have a big shopping list, sorry about that. No, not like that. We don't want to make him the order supplier. So it is when you love the Lord And how to get this love for Krishna? Devotional service, sadhana bhakti, the rules and regulations of bhakti. So devotee becomes attached to the eternal form of the Lord, just like one who's already attached. So this attachment is called Swarup Siddhi. The Lord sits in the lotus heart of the devotee in the form of the desire. In chapter canto 2, it's also described that the Lord, sound incarnation, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee and sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship and cleanses the dust of material association. In the purport, Prabhupada says, a single pure devotee can deliver all the fallen souls of the world. So one who is in the confidence of a pure devotee, like Narada or Shukadev, and has empowerment, can not only deliver himself, but he can deliver the whole world. So Prabhupada is empowering all of us to be pure devotees of the Lord. Now, I told a story last night in my home program where I went to, but I think none of you were there. So I can tell it again today. Maybe I told it last year. Though you probably forgot it because you don't remember yesterday's class, I'm sure. So, but maybe the story you remember, the power of the pure devotee to change lives, that there was one devotee who gave someone Bhagavad Gita, and his roommate was a drunkard. The roommate picked up Bhagavad Gita, he read one line, and he said, the Gita said, for the soul there is never birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. He's rubbish. Screw the book. This is rubbish. Yeah? No. So, but then the day came when this drunkard drank too much, and he went unconscious, and he was brought to Yamaraj, king of death, lord of death. Yamaraj said, you are a very sinful man. What are you going to do now? You must be punished severely. What are you going to do now? So somehow that drunkard remembered the one line from Bhagavad Gita, you know, for the soul there is never birth or death. And once having been, he's never destroyed. And then he came back to life. He came back to consciousness. And then he thought, well, what was that? He picked up Bhagavad Gita, he studied it cover to cover. He said, yes, I better do this. I better become a devotee and surrender. And he found the address in the back of the book and went to the temple, became a brahmachari. But after 6 months, he was a little bit austere in brahmachari ashram. He said, I need a drink. This is too much. Went out, went to the bar, was drinking the whole day. Night came, and the bartender said, no, we have to close now, we have to leave. And then he said to him, what are you going to do now? He had such a fright, oh my God, you're rushing. He went back to the temple, stayed there for a little tea. So even we may fall down, Krishna will take us back. So this is the power of the pure devotee of the Lord. And so I will read a few more verses, and then we will stop for today. I'll read 11 through 14. You don't have these verses. It's about demigod worship. My Lord, you're not very satisfied by worship of demigods who arrange for your worship very elaborately with various paraphernalia, but who are full of material hankerings. You're in everyone's heart as a super soul just to show your causeless mercy. But you are unavailable for the non-devotee. So we say the Lord's in the heart. You know, what's the difference if the Lord in the heart of the non-devotee, Lord in the heart of the devotees in everyone's heart? Big difference. We heard what it's like in the last verse for the Lord to be in the heart of the devotee. He comes there and there's an exchange of love between the devotee and the Lord. The non-devotee, they don't even want to hear about God. There's no exchange of love, but the Lord still provides for everyone. But according to how you deserve. It's based on justice. For the non-devotee, the super soul is there, and according to your karma, he gives you what you deserve. Nothing more, nothing less. But the Lord in the heart of the devotee gives you mercy. For the non-devotee is justice. For the devotee is mercy. So you get much more than you deserve. And if you deserve, but that's only the good things. Now the bad things, you get much less than you deserve. He takes away your bad karma. Takes away your good karma too and give you something better. But he will, if you're attached to something in your good karma, then he will make it so that you can use it in his service for him. So that is the difference. Then verse 13, but the pious activities of the people, like performance of Vedic rituals, charity, austere penances, and service, perform with a view to worship you, Krishna, and satisfy you by offering you the results, are also good. Such acts of religion never go in vain. So sometimes people come to the Lord and they ask for material things. And here it says, that's okay. There's no problem if you do the rituals. The Lord is satisfied, again, but you will get what you deserve. It doesn't go in vain, and it will help you to come to the Lord of goodness and get association with devotees, perhaps, vegetarians, they're more open. Or if you're doing pious activities, then you're more open to devotional service. So a lot of the yoga, now we have yoga. People who do yoga, they're more open. They have, you have this yoga class or something in downtown. So they're more open to devotional service. And Rabbi says, yes, these people are also good. But there's different types. There's the Sakam devotee who has, or the Sakam, he has material desires he wants to fulfill. And there's the Nishkam, who has no material desires. So the Sakam, the difference is when he does something, he thinks this is for me, basically, for me to enjoy, I want to enjoy this. Whereas the devotee, he thinks, oh, this is for Krishna to enjoy, to please Krishna. So a devotee and a non-devotee may both have a problem with their health. The non-devotee will say, please make me healthy so I can enjoy sense gratification. The devotee will say, please make me healthy so I can do some service for you. It's not like they give up. They may also pray for good health. Of course, the very high devotee, the highest level will say, okay, whatever. But if you want me to be sick, okay. If you want me to do well, but you know, when I'm sick, I can't do the service for you anymore. So, we tell what we think, but actually the Lord does what he wants, basically. But we can always pray, and prayers will not go in vain. So, the Sakam devotee, there's three kinds, the Karmis, the Gyanis, and the Yogis. All of them have desires to be fulfilled. The Karmis want to enjoy this world. The Gyanis are more in the mental world. They want to enjoy philosophy, music, or they want to ultimately merge in the white light. And the Yogis want mystic powers so they can control people, control the world. So the scientists, they are trying to be like the Yogis, control the weather, and they've really done a bad job of it. They've made it much worse. Anyway, in their attempts to control. And so they want mystic powers. But the devotees, they only want Krishna to be happy. So whatever they do, they may do the work of the Karmi or the Gyani or the Yogi, they may do work in the world, they may do some studies, educational things, or they may do practices like meditation, which the yogis also do. We meditate in japa time, on the holy name. But the whole purpose is different. The intention is different, and that is to please Krishna. So that's the difference between a pure devotee and a mixed devotee. The mixed devotee wants something, this is for me, and this is for Krishna. And the pure devotee says everything for Krishna. And whatever he gives, that's his mercy. So then, verse 14, which is the last one I'll read today. Let me offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Transcendence, who is eternally distinguished by his internal potency. His impersonal feature is realized by intelligence for self-realization. So again, it's talking about different forms. I offer my obeisances unto him who enjoys creation, maintenance, and dissolution of this universe. So different strokes for different folks, different people that want, they appreciate different aspects of the Lord. Some people appreciate his impersonal form. But, you know, there's not much to appreciate. You know, we have light in this room. It's nice, but, you know, what can you say about it? But if you see the person, you can see a lot of things about a person. You can have a relationship. You can't have much relationship with light, although they think this is the goal of life. The goal is to find out where the light is coming from. So right here we see it's coming from these lights, and outside it's coming from the sun. But if you go further, all the light in this world is coming from the Brahma Jyoti. And that's why the sky is blue, because Krishna is blue. And the Brahman is the effulgence from his body. So an intelligent person will not be satisfied simply with the light. You would say, where is it coming from? That's why the Vaishnavas are more intelligent than the impersonalists. The impersonalists don't go all the way. They stop at a certain level. So we will stop here and remember your homework. Look for the mercy today and report back tomorrow on what kind of mercy you got today in your life. And if you have any questions or comments, you can ask at this point in our class. Yes. So we have time for questions, and it looks like the class may end early today. Tomorrow it will be a little later. Yes?
You mentioned that you were able to join up immediately, and the devotees were able to join up immediately at the
How can I hear that? Can you please repeat?
Yep. You mentioned that at one point people could join up immediately, they could join the movement immediately. And doesn't seem that's what they're encouraging these days.
Yeah, right.
And I wanted to ask you about Srila Prabhupada's desires for the movement, absorbing as many people and making facility for as many people as possible to actually
live. Yes.
So the community of devotees when they want to, rather than waiting and becoming.
Right. So the question is, like I was talking about how some devotees join immediately in those days, and nowadays it's not so encouraged. I mean, you should wait some time, but yeah, it's a whole process of hell before you just joke, well, it's quite a different scenario now than when Prabhupada was here, because everybody lived in the temple. If you were outside, you were in Maya. If you were living outside the temple. So it was like joining meant you had to go and live in the temple. That's what it meant to be a devotee. So that was pretty extreme. You had to, basically you had to give up everything and surrender. And we had, everybody was saved. Grihastha, Brahmachari, everybody had the same facilities. And no money, Grihastha didn't have money. You had to give everything to the temple, whatever you had. I was a musician, I sold my child to pay the rent for 1 month, half the rent. But I would say that now it's more expanding to include different types of people who cannot just leave everything and join. We have that facility that people can do that now also. Of course, there are probably more rules for being able to live in that in the temple than before. Before we had crazy people sometimes. No, that should not be there. But
you're talking about crazy people.
Yeah.
You're talking about the drug that you're talking about.
Right, right. Yeah. So So for Prabhupada, actually that's what Prabhupada went to Varnashram for, was for the outside people. Because Varnashram can help everyone, but his idea of Varnashram is not the heavy, the force, it's not your force that you have to do it like this. But it's according to your nature, that you use your nature in the service of Krishna, somehow or other, engage yourself. And that's how he actually applied the Varnashram when he went there. He said, okay, you're an artist, you paint for Krishna. Even if you're not an artist, you paint for Krishna. And it was such an emergency that he was just recruiting everyone to do his books. I was a typist, which was very important in those days. I was typing Bhagavad Gita, my brother Bhagavad Gita, typesetting. So he also had, it was like that then, that was more, there's a lot of, Prabhupada was encouraging according to our natures, but when you first go in the temple, you were washing pots for sure, and making chapatis or whatever. But I would say it's good to expand the preaching to different types of people, because that's how our movement has evolved over the years, that it has become more mainstream, in a sense, that we have people who have jobs. We didn't have jobs in those days, mostly. We were just chanting on the streets and begging and selling back to Godheads, which is not so practical in the long run way to maintain yourself, maintain the temple. Now it's much nicer with the restaurants. I hear that they're doing very well and other different programs. But Prabhupada's desire was to expand it to everyone in the world. Everyone in the world should have an opportunity to read the books, to become a devotee. And it will evolve more. And I think there will, again, come a time when there are devotees filling up the temples. I think it will come. Because the world is in such a situation, people can lose their homes. My father lost his house. And Prabhupada said he will come by the millions to our farms. And people will come just, for food and place to stay. And they will be driven out of their homes by taxation, by mortgage, whatever. So, the time will come. It was a great emergency. It's still an emergency, but we don't feel it so much now. And we're kind of living in a bubble, that there's no emergency. There is. There is an emergency. I had a dream, actually, about these people in Syria. I think there's a war going on, and people had to leave their homes. I had a dream I was in some Indian's house in Syria, some Indian person. And they were inside, and everything was fine. And the boy, he went outside, and all of a sudden, he could hear, run, run, run. Everybody just had to run. And I thought, wow, that's all, just run. Don't think about your house, don't think about run or die. And that's basically what's happening in many parts of the world right now. These wars are going on. We're kind of protected here. But there is an emergency, and when Prabhupada was here, there's still an emergency. He wanted hundreds and thousands of gurus to preach all over the world. We need that for the whole world. Now we have a few, 100 or something. I don't know how many there are, but not enough. We need everyone, should be good. So any other questions? Yes?
Just wondering, what are the circumstances leading
from
Brahma to
ask
for mercy?
What were the circumstances? Oh, okay, well, yes, I should explain that. So it was Brahma just woke up in the morning on his day, and he woke up in the dark. There was nothing there. And he was trying to figure out, where am I, who am I, what am I? He was sitting on top of his lotus, and he felt the lotus, and so he started climbing down. Then he heard the words tapa, austerity, and he understood, okay. And then he heard the Gayatri Mantra from Krishna's flute. And he understood, okay, I have to meditate on this mantra, Gopal Gayatri. Or maybe Kama Gayatri. Anyway, he got different ones. So he meditated, and then after 100 years, the Lord showed him, gave his darshan. But Brahma didn't know how to create, because when you go to sleep, you forget everything. And he couldn't remember. So now he's praying for empowerment to create the world, the universe as it was before. He's praying for mercy from the Lord so he can do his service. And it's like what's happening when Brahma wakes up in the morning. And so this is like his Mangalarti, and he's offering prayers. First thing you do, Pujari wakes Krishna up, and then we come and we offer prayers. So it's like his Mangalarti, he's coming, he's offering prayers to the Lord. But his Lord is in his heart. He didn't have to go to a temple. He's getting the form of the Lord is manifested in his heart. So he is offering his prayers to the Lord in his heart. For Pradakshan Rishi. Yes. That's important. I should do that. We'll hear more tomorrow. Okay, any other questions?
When we have the confidence that Krishna would show mercy on us, will there not be a possibility that we would commit mistakes again and again, thinking that he would have mercy on us again?
Yes. The question is, if we are confident that Krishna will show his mercy, then won't we think, well, okay, you know, I got the mercy today, I can do the same mistake tomorrow. But along with the mercy comes suffering sometimes, so you realize, no, that was not a good idea. Some kinds of mercy, you get some suffering that goes with it, so then you don't make the same mistake again. Very good question. Now why would you, you know, you get, okay, you I don't know, what you do, oh, you eat something that's not offered, devotee would eat something not offered to Krishna. We're only supposed to eat prasada. And in India, you have to be really careful about that one. You go and have some of this on the street. There's right across the temple, there's a whole line. What a pani puri? Oh yeah, pani puri. The water might be bad and the oil might be bad. And so if you go and say that, okay, no, this is Vrindavan. Some people say everything in Vrindavan is prasad, but it's not true. You have to offer it to Krishna first. Otherwise, how can we get offered anything if, you know, if it's all prasad? What are we going to offer to Krishna if we live there? So you go, you eat your pani puri, and you get a severe pain in your stomach. And you think, oh, this time I ate something that was not offered to Krishna. I won't do that mistake again. I got the mercy of Krishna in the form of pain in the stomach. So the mercy may come as suffering to the body or mind. So therefore, but it's to help us realize, no, that's not what you want. You don't do that mistake again. Sinning, it's called sinning on the strength of chanting. There is one offense. You know the 10 offenses to the holy name? Yeah, so there are 10 offenses when you chant Hare Krishna. One of the 10 offenses to chanting is thinking, I will do some sin, and then I will chant to counteract it. Today I will steal something, or I will do a little gambling, you know, 1 rupee for the lottery, and I can gain 1,000,000 rupees. So let me just spend this 1 rupee on gambling. And I will chant Hare Krishna, I will chant 2 rounds to counteract this gambling. So that's sinful. That's an offense. And you cannot make progress if you commit an offense. So it's good to have a little bit more knowledge of what you're doing as devotee. That there are offenses to the holy name and other offenses to criticize a devotee, another devotee, especially one who's preaching. To neglect the orders of the spiritual master. And these are offenses. Inattentiveness while chanting. Another offense. Okay, any other questions? mercy today, and it can come in different ways, but thank Krishna for it. Hare Krishna, always Krishna, Prabhupada. We will see you tomorrow at 10:30 for the last class of the Sunday. It's only two classes. And there's a ladies' sangha tomorrow at 6 o'clock at Jamuna Sundari's house. And there's a, yeah, I'm not sure about the program on Wednesday. I'll have that. Okay, honey.
Come here. they can eat the summer. That's what they're called. And if you can play Prabhupada or something, they live in this house. Hope we can help them. Maybe come out and return. Come.
Thank you.